Good evening, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Well, I love this group. I am very blessed because I get to. I had my birthday yesterday, 62. You know, and I came a day when I was 31. I think I was living in some bachelor pad. That's what I called my bachelor pad. And now I'm 62 and I'm married for 30 years. And 4 children, 6 grandchildren. And I got to hang out with my homeboys. We went out to lunch. Well, not all of them could show up, but a lot of guys showed up. We had about 30 guys there and we had lunch and it was wonderful. And at night I went to go out with about 3 of my kids and 4 of my grandkids and their husbands and everything like that. I mean, the kids' husbands. And it was a wonderful, wonderful day. And now I'm here with you guys. And last month I was over at the 12-step house. And coming up, I'll be going at the Chabad up in Carl Springs and hanging out with people there. I just get to hang out with, and when I'm not here in Carl Springs or hanging around with my guys for lunch, or tomorrow at 12:30, we're going to have about 10 or 15 guys and a couple of pastors I know. We're going to have lunch, and when I'm not doing that, I'm in church or at Bible study or something like that. I mean, I just have, my grandmother would say, don't put the kanahar on it, you know, don't put the curse on it, you know, because I don't want to, I'm just having too good a time. You know, they say that the joy of living is the theme of the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to sort of maybe start off with the joy of living. You don't want to miss that deal. I mean, I'm not putting down mere physical sobriety or even emotional sobriety, but you don't want to leave this planet. You don't want to get involved in this deal and white knuckle this thing or even settle for anything less than joy. You know, I'm going to tell you something. You know, I've been broke in AA. You know, broke doesn't take away joy. You know, foreclosure, I've been foreclosed on in AA. You know, foreclosure doesn't take away joy. You know, I've had a wife that doesn't understand and people that treat me unfairly, you know, that doesn't really take away joy. You know, I've had bad things happen to me, unfair things happen to me, it won't take away joy. You know, traffic jams don't take away joy. You know, I've had cancer in Alcoholics Anonymous and radiation therapy, you know, it doesn't even touch joy. Doesn't mean you don't have some bad moments or some rough times or some difficult situations or even maybe a little fear and some stuff going on. But you want something, none of that stuff touches joy. And you know, the unfortunate thing is I can't even explain what joy is to you. You're just going to have to get that deal. You're going to have to find that. You're going to have to find it for yourself. You know, but I can tell you this, it must exist because I know I got it and I know they got it. And they say the theme of the 12 step is the joy of living. So whatever it is, it exists and it's around. And if you're saying, I don't know what he's talking about, then I guess that means you got to try to get that deal. That's a great deal. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that stuff. I've learned a lot. You know, you learn a lot in life. You know, it's that old saying, I say it every time, when the man with experience meets the man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. You know, I graduated law school. I'm a lawyer. And when I graduated law school, I did very well in law school. I graduated. I'm a smart guy. And I knew just enough to get you in trouble. I knew just enough to really get you in trouble if you let me loose. They let me loose on the general public. It was a very scary deal. You know, fortunately, I started off as an assistant district attorney, so the worst that would happen is people would get out of jail, you know? I couldn't actually do any damage. They didn't let me handle, like, murder cases and stuff like that until I knew what was going on. But after about 3 or 4 years of prosecuting, I felt pretty comfortable doing murder cases, whatever it is. In other words, after I got the experience that law school doesn't teach you as to how to handle myself in the courtroom, how to handle myself with witnesses, I was competent to actually be unleashed in a courtroom and do serious cases. Well, the fact of the matter is that when I got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, I may have read the book, I may have thought I knew a lot, but I didn't really know much. And the fact that, and what I had to do was I had to go to school in Alcoholics Anonymous. And going to school in Alcoholics Anonymous means that I had to deal with these steps and deal with these principles. and deal with this relationship with God, whoever he is, while I was, it was like, I had to deal with it on the run. Although it's not like one of these things, like you go away for 20 years and not experience life and try to get your act together. I had to try to get my act together. You got to try to get your act together on this deal and figure out how to do this deal, this new way of living, this new paradigm, while the checks are bouncing. While you're being served with foreclosure, while the boss is saying you're fired, you know, while all these unusual, freaky things are happening to you and you're scared, they don't give you like off time. You've got to learn how to grow up and be a human being and learn how to handle tough. No, it's happening to you as you're learning. As you're learning, you're going through rejection, you're going through trials, you're going through financial problems, you're going through health problems. There's no let up. And you learn this thing. You learn that, I mean, you need not only to be an alcoholic in order to do this thing, you gotta be an alcoholic and experiencing life and experiencing problems and going through the crap, and while you're going through it, looking at him, whoever he is. They talk about him, they say, see to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. He says, being all powerful, he gives us everything we need if you stay close to him and do his works well. And you may spend the next 15 years trying to figure out, get this, who he is. You know, that can be a tough deal. You're trying to do this thing and listen to what they're saying and figure this thing out, and you're still trying to figure out who he is, and at the same time trying to figure out how to do it and how to stay close to him, and he'll give you everything you need as long as you do his works well. And what is his works, and what does that have to do with it? And the way I learned this thing is not only by going through life, but hanging out with people that seem to have their act together. And if you can't find those people that seem to be emotionally sober and spiritually sober and physically sober, if you can't find them in Alcoholics Anonymous, then the reason is you ain't really interested. You ain't looking. You ain't interested in that deal because they're all over the place. They're all over the place if you look for them. You know, I wanted it. You know, they say, what do they say? They say, if you want what we have, if you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. That presupposes that there's a we. If you're looking at a we, it may not be like a Russell, it may be an Eddie Edwards, it may be a Bob. If you see a group of people, or several people, or a guy, or a gal, and you say, I wish I could be like that person, I wish I had what that person had, and you're willing to do whatever you have to do. Listen, you know, I wanted to be a fine lawyer. I wanted to be a good lawyer. I wanted to be a trial lawyer. You know what I did? Every time I heard that there was a great lawyer giving a closing argument or an opening statement or cross-examining, I would go down to court and I would watch that lawyer. You know what I would do? I would start acting like that lawyer. In my closing arguments, I would steal stuff that he said. I would learn how to do the things he did. I would try, if he was going out to lunch, I'd try to sit next to him and go, I'll bet if you're a tennis player. And I'm not. But I'll bet if you're a tennis player and you want to be an Olympian or a professional tennis player, I'll bet what you try to do is you try to get in close with the tennis players. I'll bet you try to see whether you can play tennis with the, you know, with the top tennis players. I'll bet the better your opponent is, the people you hang around, the better you become. If you're a pro football player, you want to agree with the pro team. You want to hang out with the people that are doing it. That are how would you want it? That's what they're saying. If you want, we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And I'll tell you, I may not have understood what they had, but I wanted it. And so I hung around with these guys. And if you hang around with these guys, or these gals, they introduce you to other guys and gals. They're all over the place. And those are the guys, and you know something? They keep you away. They don't introduce you to toxic people. And they tell you stuff that you don't like. And they say things to you that make you feel bad, and they hurt your feelings. You know why? Because they brainwash you. But, you know, if you're like me, my brain needed washing. You know, so a lot of things I learned by, I didn't understand it. They don't want to explain it. They just said, do it. They say, do it. You know, I'll tell you one thing. I think they operate under the premise I operate on. If you got to explain the explanation, just don't even bother. Once you give the explanation once, if you got to explain that, say, have a nice life. Because they're just not really interested. Because you may not understand what you're told to do until 3 years down the road. And then you may look back and say, now I know why that guy told me what to do. Because if you got to wait to do this stuff, when you understand it and you accept it, you ain't never going to do it. Because most of this stuff ain't going to make any sense. Because if it made sense to you, you'd be doing it already. So what I want to share with you is some of the things that I was told to do and one of the things I did. Because you just learn stuff out of the blue. Out of the blue, you learn stuff just dealing with life. You know, there's different things to talk about in the 12th step. And I don't know, I guess tonight I want to talk a little bit about service. I really think that's so important. That's such a big deal. I don't know the statistics on this. I know I sometimes spout statistics that 0.5% of people stay sober more than 20 years. I don't know if that's true or not, but I know there's a large percentage of people that drink again. There's a large percentage of people that don't drink that are sort of like living lives of quiet desperation. They're sober, but they're not happy with their sobriety, you know, but they're hanging in there. I can't tell you how many guys I know with 10, 15, and 20 years sobriety eventually went out again because they were popping prescription medication. I wish I had a dollar for every man I know who was a good man, you know, who was doing step series and working the steps, that at 10 years or 15 years didn't start using Xanax or Prolex or whatever Lex you got out there, or Klonopin, or started popping stuff because they went to a doctor, because they had anxiety, because they had this, because they had that, because they had depression. And of course, if you're not doing, listen, here's one thing, I'm not putting down medication. There may be people that need medication. I happen to believe there's a lot of people that it's a lot of over-medication, because when you go to a doctor, I'll tell you one thing I know about this disease, and you hang around dealing with people who are alcoholics and addicts long enough, you see this. When you're not working a spiritual program of recovery, when you're not maintaining and growing in that relationship with God, when you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, what happens to you looks like you need medication. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, if you go to an AA room and say, I can't believe the way my life has treated me, I can't believe what's happening, I feel like I want to kill myself, my life is a piece of crap, I'm a piece of crap, some guy will tell you, say, well, why don't you go get a drink? Why don't you shut up? Why don't you work the bar? Why don't you do that? They'll probably hurt your feelings or slap you around or tell you to stop feeling sorry for yourself. Why don't you go find somebody to help, or maybe take out a 12-step call, or say, why don't you sponsor? You've been here 10 years, you don't sponsor anybody. They'll tell you to do all sorts of stuff that you think is crazy that you don't want to do. Of course, if you do it, you'll get well. You know what I mean? But they'll tell you to do all that stuff. But if you go to a doctor and tell him the same thing, he'll write you a prescription. If you're 10 years sober and you go to a doctor and say the same thing you would say to an old timer in AA, he'll write you a script. Because that's what they do. Because it sounds suicidal, it sounds depressive, it sounds like it'll write you a script. And 3 years later, you'll be either strung out on drugs or you'll be drinking. And if you survive that, and many people don't, because it's very hard to get back after a lot of time, and they ask how'd you get on, you won't even tell them why, except you went to a doctor and it was doctor prescribed and you didn't know what to do. Now that is not to say that anybody who's taking anything right now, you're wrong or you're bad. It's just an observation I made by hanging around here for 30 years. You know, I didn't have time to go to school at it because I was too busy sponsoring guys who were doing it. I was actually on the front lines watching it happen. And that's the deal. So you just learn all sorts of stuff and you see, you know things that you got to be careful about. So I got a prop here. I got a prop here because at my birthday party yesterday, one of my buddies gave me this. So I said, I'm going to use this at a meeting. I'm not going to show. I'm going to show it to you later. You know, but you're going to see it. Don't worry about it. But I'm going to tell you something about the 12th step. This prop has something to do with the 12th step. I was 3 years sober. I've been doing these step series and these talks for like 27 years now. When I was about 3 years sober, they asked me to do a step series down there. And I think I may have told this before here at this group, but I'm going to tell it again because it has to do really with the 12th step. Something I learned about the 12th step and about carrying the message. And, sometimes I'll be asked, or somebody will ask you to chair a meeting or to do a step or to do something. And you'll hear people say, and I've said it, I'm not ready. You ever tell somebody ever ask you to do something and you say, well, I'm not ready? You ever say that? Somebody ever hear, you ever do that? I'm not ready. So, you know, that's alcohol code for I'm scared. I'm scared because I'll screw up. Because they'll laugh at me. Because I won't know what I'm doing. You with me? So I start doing this step series where you have to get up there and you got to talk like this. And I had about 3 years and I start doing it. And I was at this group called the Homestead Group. And, you know, I'm an alcoholic, so I've got, you know what they say in the 12 and 12, we talk about it, it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his devastating weakness and all its consequences, sobriety will be precarious of true happiness, he'll find none at all. And what you learn once you get in here is you can get sober, but that don't necessarily make you happy. It'll stop you from getting arrested, it'll cure up a whole lot of problems you're having because you can't stop drinking, but it ain't going to necessarily make you happy. It ain't going to necessarily stop the fear at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's not going to stop the depression, it's not going to stop, as a matter of fact, a lot of that stuff is going to really come full force because you ain't medicating yourself anymore, and you get to deal with alcoholism full force without the symptom, without the medication of alcohol. Because what alcohol really is it's the thing we use to get the reprieve from alcoholism. What alcoholism is the way we are like now. You know, if you're sober, that's what you got. You got alcohol. Now you're experiencing alcoholism. This, you know how you feel right now? That's what alcoholism feels like. So whatever you're feeling right now, that's what alcoholism feels like, you know? So, you know, if you feel great and you're full of joy, then you're still an alcoholic. But you're on the beam. You're doing the deal you're supposed to be doing because that's how you feel like it when you know when you've got that relationship going because it gives you everything you need. If you're not feeling that way, then there's something amiss. There's something that you got a little fine tuning to go. You got a few things you got to do. So the bottom line is, I get involved in this deal, and I go down to this room. And since I have all these other consequences of being, you know, the consequences of being an alcoholic, everybody's got to like you because you're so wonderful. You know, how could they not like you? You're wonderful. You know what I mean? It's not fair. Life has to go fair. Life has to go your way. You're not allowed to have problems. You know, you deserve to feel good all the time. You deserve to have money. Bad things shouldn't happen to you. You know, I could name a million, just a million things that goes through the alcoholic mind the way life is supposed to be. And one of the things that alcoholics can't stand is they can't stand the possibility that they may be rejected or they may not be liked. I mean, if anything, alcoholics want people to love them all the time. They want to be accepted. We're acceptaholics. We want to belong. You know what I mean? That's why we drank. That's why we drank, because we had to drink at bars. I had to drink at bars, you know, because I was scared that the group wouldn't accept me. So I have a couple of drinks and I own the group. You know? You go from being scared that they're going to hate you and you're going to be horrible, and you take a couple of drinks and you're like, own them. They better worry about whether you like them. I mean, it took me. That's what alcohol did for me. You know, I was a nothing. I was a nobody. You know, and I take a couple drinks and I became an almost. You know, to a nothing, an almost is like top of the world. You know, so what I mean? That's what it did for me. So when I go down and I'm 3 years sober and I'm doing a step series, I want everybody to like me. I want everybody to laugh at my jokes. I want everybody to pay attention to me. And I'm looking at this audience. And of course, I'm selfish and self-centered, and I'm looking at this audience, and I understand what the 12th step is we carry the message, right? So we're supposed to carry a message, which means after the meeting, everybody is supposed to stay sober for 20 years and give you credit for it or something like that and run up to you and say how much they love you and how you changed their life and all that sort of stuff. And I'm doing whatever I'm doing, a third step, fourth step, whatever it is at the Homestead Group, and I'm looking at this sea of people, and they're like staring at me. And at least the way I perceived it, and of course this is my perception, there ain't no laughing going on, there ain't no smile. It's like an oil painting. There ain't no movement, you know. I'm up there talking and they don't love me. I don't feel the love. You understand what I'm saying? Do you know what it's like to be up here in front of 20, 30, 40 people when you don't feel the love, you know? It's a bad, well, you know, you guys are pretty good. You like chuckle every once in a while. But, you know, it's a tough feeling when you don't feel the love. So I know that they hate me. I'm doing terrible. You know how alcoholics are. When you got a problem and you're doing terrible, that means you're going to die. You go straight to death. There's some, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to die, you know. It's bad, you know. Because then you leave and you're self-centered, so you start thinking. What do you think? When you're an alcoholic and things don't go your way, what do you think about? Well, I don't know about you, but I think about me all the time. I think about me and what you're thinking about me. I'm thinking about me and what you're thinking about me. And since I know you're not thinking about good things about me, I'm thinking about me and what you're thinking about me and what you're saying about me. And I know you're all talking about me. And I'm driving back to my house with all these people thinking bad things about me and talking bad things about me. And I'm saying, I ain't going back to that place. I'm on like third step. I said, that's it for me. They hate me. They don't like me. I ain't going back to that place. You know? Now I got this problem. Now I'm an alcoholic. So you understand, being an alcoholic, you can do that. Did you know that? If you're an alcoholic, you can do that. You can call in sick. You can say, I can't come in, my mother died. You know, you can't do it more than once with the same person. You know what I mean? Use the same excuse. My other mother died or something like that. But that's what you could, as an alcoholic, you're allowed to lie. You're allowed to call up and say, I've got cancer, you know, I can't do it, it's too far. You're allowed to make up stuff and not go back. So you can understand, naturally, as an alcoholic, I'm already telling myself I'm not going back because they don't like me. I'm doing a lousy job and thinking about ways I can get out of it, because that's what alcoholics do. That's what we do. You know what the problem is? The problem is, and I was talking to somebody today, I went to Bible study this morning, we were talking about this, about what happens when you first start getting a taste of God and faith in your life. What happens is I used to love being bad. I used to love getting mad. I used to love and get off on and get excitement from getting into fights or getting into arguments. I used to love being prideful or gluttonous or greedy or envious or lustful or sarcastic or you know, getting out of things. Or I used to love doing all that stuff. You know, I used to love that kind of stuff. I used to live, that was my life. I liked living that way. It felt good to live that way. What happens is when you start living this way and getting involved this way, that stuff is no longer comfortable. It becomes you don't do it because somebody lays down a rule, because I'm an alcoholic, I'm a rule buster. Rules don't work for me. It doesn't matter that you tell me not to do something. You know, the bottom line is I'm a guy who bends the rules. I break the rules. I do whatever I want to do as far as the rules are concerned. But what happens is when you start hanging around with men that have integrity, and you want them to like you, and you hang around groups that have integrity and people that have integrity and you want to be like them, when you start having faith in some sort of God and you don't know who God is, but you know he wants you to help people, he wants you to, you know, treat people decently, he wants you not to lie, when you start buying into that stuff and you're focusing on that stuff all the time, you start becoming a person that feels uncomfortable lying. You start being a person that can't live with yourself when you're being grandiose. You start being a person that doesn't like being slothful or procrastinating. You start being a person that can no longer stand to live the life I used to live when I was a drunk. Whether I was drunk or sober, it doesn't work. So you find that even though you may tell yourself all sorts of crazy things, and you may even slip once in a while into it, the bottom line is you don't like it and you can't stand to be that way. So of course, I showed up again. Even though I was telling myself they didn't like me and everything like that, I knew I had made a commitment, and I had to keep my commitment. And you know, that sort of stuff plays out even today. I'm involved with, you know, as you know, I'm involved in the church, I'm involved with religious stuff, and I got involved when I was 15 years sober, and you know, I'm not telling you you have to do that. It is encouraged in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of the first founders were involved in religion and things like that. It wasn't a dirty word for them. You know, in Akron, Ohio, they read the Bible before every meeting for many, many years. And, you know, that's the deal. But I'm not going to go into it. But the bottom line is, as a matter of fact, being involved in that, I agree every year to support a particular ministry called Youth for Christ. Okay? You don't have to run out of the room or scream because I used the C word. But, you know, I support that, which means they have a banquet every year. And this one guy I support, I get a table for 10 people, and I show up, and I get 9 other people to show up, 8 other, because my wife usually comes. We give a little donation. It's like a 2-hour thing. We have a little dinner and everything like that, and that's the deal. And that's what I do. It's just something I do to help support him, and I support a bunch of other things. And I agreed to do this 4 months ago, and I do it every year. Every year I do it. I agreed to do it 4 months ago. And 3 days ago, my wife advised me that she couldn't go that night. And it's a big deal. You know, this guy plans this thing, and it's planned and everything like that. She advised me that she couldn't go that night, and she wanted me to call up the guy and tell him I couldn't go and try to switch nights, which is really, you know, when you're in charge of all these things, you got, you know, all the tables set and all the sponsors, she wanted me to switch nights. She gave me the full court press. You know, I love my wife. She's a great gal and everything like that, but she gave me, man, I'll tell you, I've been living with this gal for 30 years, and I got three daughters. Three daughters. Now, I don't know that much about women. No man knows that much about women. You know what I mean? It's a secret thing. They keep it locked up in some safe somewhere, you know? But I know this. When a woman wants something, it's a tough deal. This isn't like one of those deals where, you know, she asks a question and you say, no, it ain't going to happen, then they, like, let go. We're talking like anacondas. We're talking about, you know, we're talking about she's going to remember everything I've ever done my entire life. Well, 16 years ago, I remember you didn't go here when you didn't go there. You know, I mean, it's going to be a rough deal. It ain't going to be pretty, you know. You're going to suffer. You're going to suffer. So she sends me emails, you ought to switch. And I finally had to say, listen, I gave this guy my word 4 months ago I would do this. The last thing I'm going to do is call him up a week before the event and say, I can't go. You know, I mean, I might do that if, you know, somebody died in the family and say, I can't go and switch all your plans. It just ain't going to happen. Because, I mean, I love you, but I'll go without you. I'll fill you seat with somebody. It just ain't going to happen. I'm not even going to do it. I'm not even going to ask. I can't. Because you know what I felt like? I'm just going to tell you. I felt like that's what I used to do when I was drinking. You know, to me, to call up a week before and say, I can't make it, and either make up a story or not make up a story and ask a guy to move things around, to me, it was like, to me, you may think this is crazy. To me, it's like taking a drink of scotch. I might as well drink. That's how much it was like the way I used to run my life. If you knew me and you were a friend of mine, I was not dependable. You could not depend upon me. And the one thing I want people to be able to do is say, you know, I can tell you one thing about Russell, he's dependable. You know, he's dependable. You know, and so it's something I wouldn't do. So in any event, I went back to this place. But that was learned over years about God wants me to be dependable. See, I've learned a lot of things about God that they actually tell you in the book, or they may not even tell you. I learned that the God of my understanding wants me to be dependable, wants me to be loyal, wants me to be loving, wants me to be a lot of things, you know, to do His will. You know, I've learned a lot about what His will is, talking to sponsors. You don't learn them all at once. You don't learn it in 2 hours. You don't learn it in a 12-week step series. You learn it over and over again just by living life. You learn how the Lord wants you to do and what His will is and things like that. And so I'm going to this meeting. Remember, this is the meeting where they hate me, where I just did the worst fourth step meeting. I just done the worst meeting I could ever do in my life. Didn't carry the message at all. I know they hate me. And I'm sitting there at this meeting, and I get to the podium like I'm here right now, and all of a sudden this guy comes up to me, and I didn't see him. He came up from the back and he said, can I talk to you for a second? And I said, yeah, sure. He says, it was 5 minutes before the meeting. He said, I just want to tell you something. I said, what? And here I am thinking, you know, I've got all these things in my mind. I did the worst meeting in the world. The group didn't like me. I was horrible. I was terrible. And he says, I just want to tell you. He introduced himself. He says, you saved my life. I said, what? He says, last week you saved my life when you did that meeting. He says, yeah, I was going to drink again. I was going to go out. I was depressed. I had all sorts of things happening to me. And I figured, you know, I would go to one more meeting and see what was happening before I went out and drank or something like that. And when you said, he looked at me, he says, you know, when you said the chicken was on the roof, all of a sudden, the whole thing made sense to me. That problem I had went away. And I understood everything that this program was about. And I can't tell you how my life has changed when you said the chicken was on the roof. And so here I'm thinking, I said, well, I know I never said that. Now, mind you, even in 3 years, I was smart enough to take credit for it. You understand what I'm saying? No, because it wasn't really that. It wasn't a lie, because I was talking some poultry there. There was a poultry part, you know what I mean? I can't remember, but There was a feather thing. There was some feathers and stuff, but I don't think it was. It wasn't. He didn't get it right. It wasn't chicken on the roof. It was like, I was talking about like a turkey in the basement. You know, it was like he was like off by a few millimeters. You know, I was talking basement. He was talking roof. He was talking chicken. I was talking turkey. You know, but then I realized for the first time. But that's what he heard. Then I realized for the first time I'm up here, probably doing the worst meeting I've ever done in my life. The worst meeting, at least I think it's the worst meeting I've ever done in my life. I think it's not working, you know what I mean? And he's in the back room dying, and he's looking, he's just coming there praying and looking on the small amount of nugget of faith that maybe some guy will say something that will help him out. And I say, turkey in the basement. And it goes floating across the room, turkey in the basement, turkey in the basement, turkey, gets all the way to the back. And it goes into his ears, turkey in the basement. And God knows that in his heart, the piece that's missing, the jigsaw piece that's missing, is chicken on the roof. And God does what God does best, and it goes in, turkey in the basement, and all of a sudden he hears chicken on the roof, because of everything that's going on, it's like chicken on the roof, and he's saved, and I get the credit. And I get the credit. And then I realized for the first time as I'm driving, I'm saying, this is amazing. I thought it was the worst meeting in the world, and it saved this guy's life. And I realized for the first time when I looked at the 12th step, I had never said this before, that it doesn't say we carry the message. It says we try to carry the message. You know, there's a big difference between carrying the message and trying to carry the message. Because if I have to carry the message, then I'm responsible for what you hear me say and how you put it into practice. So if somebody drinks after this, you know something? It's my fault. You know, Russell made me drink. Russell said this. He hurt my feelings. Let me tell you something. I can't make anybody drink. I don't care what I say to you. You know, you want to use me or whatever you think I said or I said as an excuse for drinking? Hey, don't even come to the meeting. Just start drinking. Because if it ain't me, it's going to be somebody else. It's going to be something else. I've heard a lot of stuff that pissed me off, and hey, it didn't make me drink. The bottom line is, so what I learned is that the only thing I do or I have to do, you know, because I don't get people sober. I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over alcoholics. I can't get you sober. I can't even get myself sober. There's only one who has all power. That one's God. May you find him now. It doesn't say like God is like 90% and Russ has like 10%. He may work through me. I may say a turkey in the basement and he may all of a sudden it's chicken on the roof. He may work through me. But all I got to do is try to carry the message, which is really all I'm doing now. You know, I don't even worry about what I'm going to say because you know what? This is going to be the lousiest 12-step meeting I've ever done in my life, but it's going to be the best one I can do right now. And all God has asked me to do is go up there. He says, I'll give you the words. I'll put the words in your mouth. And he says, all he says is go up there and try to do the best you can. I'll take care of the rest. And that's the way Bill Wilson did it, and that's the way I did it, and that's the way my sponsors, and that's the way people do it. It's all a God thing. And so, yesterday, because I tell this story from time to time, so I've been trying to figure out now, how can I, maybe there's some way I can manipulate this thing so that people don't get it wrong. You know, and I've seen this happen. I've spoken to groups of 1,000, 2,000 people, you know what I mean? And they come up to me afterwards, and they all hear different things. You'll speak for an hour, and one person says, you know what really got when you said this? And the next person will say, when you said that, it'll be something completely different. And another person, when you said that, everybody hears something, because everybody's a different age, a different sex, has different experiences, hears different things, put things together, you have your life experience that you add on to stuff that I say, you think I said certain things, or it means something, and you put things together. Everybody, if there's 100 people here, there's 100 different meetings going on. You know, so it doesn't matter. You think this is a 12-step meeting, some other guy hears something, it's the third step. You know, and you just start putting stuff together and God operates that way. But I've been trying to figure out, now there must be a way I can make sure that people hear chicken on the roof rather than turkey in the basement. You know, I've been talking to my guys, now how can I control your mind? How can I, because I want control, I'm an alcoholic, so that you only hear chicken on, because I don't want any of you going out there and saying, you know, I heard Russell the other day, what was done, I and start talking just plain poultry, or, you know, turkey in the basement. So I've decided to use props. So, Jim, help me out with this. So you won't forget that this is, now this is,
crazy. Now, folks, that's a chicken. That's not a turkey on the roof, okay? You see, so now ain't nobody going out there talking about turkeys in the basement, cows in the pasture, the chicken on the roof deal. So with that in mind, I want to read you something. I want to read you two things from the big book. And then I'm going to fast shuffle. Well, listen, you know, this is listen to this deal. I got to find this thing that I want to read. I want to read a couple things. Bill Wilson is sponsored by Ebby. Remember Ebby Thatcher came to visit Bill Wilson? I want to read something to you from the big book. Okay? Ebby Thatcher calls up Bill Wilson. And he tells him, he says, I want to come by and see you. He says, near the end of that bleak November, I sat drinking in my kitchen. With a certain satisfaction, I reflected there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through the night and the next day. My wife was at work. I wondered whether I dare hide a full bottle of gin near the head of the bed. I would need it before daylight. My musings were interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend, an old drinking buddy, asked if he might come over. He was sober. This is when Ebby Thatcher first comes to 12-step. Of course, they didn't call it steps then. To carry the message, the good news, to Bill Wilson. It was years I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed that he was sober. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he had escaped. Of course he would have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to a complete jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. The door opened, and there he stood, fresh skinned, glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? I pushed the drink. Now I want you to picture this. I pushed the drink across the table. Now I want you to understand something. This is Bill Wilson being 12-step. Do you know who 12-step Dr. Bob? Who 12-step Dr. Bob? And this program was founded by who? Bill and Dr. Bob. So Bill and Bob talked about then 12-stepped, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, Bill Dodson. And then they 12-stepped some other guys and they got sober. And then those guys 12-stepped some guys. And those guys 12-stepped some guys. And then moved to Akron and Cleveland and New York and they 12-stepped some guys. And somewhere along the line, along the deal, okay, somebody carried the message to you. Somebody carried the message. Nobody who's in here tonight didn't get this message, except it was somehow carried or related to them by somebody who it was previously related to, by somebody it was previously related to, by somebody where it didn't eventually get back to Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson. And Bill Wilson was 12-step by this guy. So you're sober today. The only reason you're sober today is because this guy went to see Bill Wilson. He might as well have been 12-stepping you. This guy is the first 12-step that we know of in our program that's written about, you know, which is an absolute, there's an absolute linkage between this 12-step call, and the fact that you're sober today. So you might be interested in this, because this has to do with you. How this thing turns out has to do with whether you're going to stay sober or not or eventually get this message. So you better pray this thing turns out okay. You know what I mean? We're going to be very interested in what this guy has to say. You know? And I got news for you. He's going to say some shit you're not going to like. He's going to say some stuff that's not conference approved. He's going to say some stuff that people in AA would walk out the room today. And you know something? Whatever he said, Bill Wilson got sober as a result of it. This is what happened. I pushed the drink across the table. He refused it. Disappointed but curious. I wondered what had gotten into the fellow. He wasn't himself. Come, what's all this about? I queried. He looked straight at me. Simply but smilingly, he said, you know what he said? I've got religion. How many times you've heard in here, well, I'm spiritual, I'm not religious. You know, like I'm better than religious people. I'm like different. I'm like at a higher plane than religious people. Maybe you're just a little blind. Maybe you're just a little too full of yourself. Maybe you're just too good, you know, to be like a common religious person. Because I can tell you what, the guy who did this, he was spiritual, but you wanted something, he wasn't scared of religion. He didn't put down religion. As a matter of fact, he believed what it said in this book, where it says, we begin to see where religious people are right. He was religious. He didn't run away from religion. You know, the only words he said to Bill Wilson, he said, I've got religion. And Bill Wilson understood what that meant. It had something to do with God. I was aghast. He was ticked off. He was upset. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little cracked about religion. He had that starry-eyed look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right, but bless his heart, let him rant. My gin would last longer than his preaching. Wasn't exactly well. Listen, let me tell you something. We as a group, we're not doing well at this point. It ain't working out too well for us. But he did no ranting. In a matter-of-fact way, he told how two men had appeared in court, persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They had told of a simple religious program. A simple religious program. A simple religious idea. And a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. He had come to pass his experience along to me. If I cared to have it. I was shocked but interested. Certainly I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. He talked for hours about this religious idea. Childhood memories rose before me. I could almost hear the sounds of the preacher's voice as I sat on still Sundays way over there on the hillside. For hours he talked about that. Now, Bill Wilson continued to drink. 6 months later, in like Towns Hospital or something like that, he woke up and he says, if there is a God, let him disclose himself to me now. And he had a white line experience. And he became sober as a result of that failed 12-step call. And Bill, Ebbie Thatcher walked away from that 12-step call like as a human being with human eyes, like I walked away from that group when I first shared that story and I said, they don't like me. This thing ain't working. That was the worst. You never know the effect what God can do with the stuff you say and the stuff you do with another person. He may say, well, I got enough gin. You know, it don't matter. But you don't know what's going to happen 6 months, 6 years, when you start planting those seeds. And as a result of what happened, what he was told, that simple religious idea, and all the crap that went on in Bill Wilson's life, after that 6 months, during that 6 month period of time, he found himself in the hospital on his knees asking God to come into his life. He had a white light experience. He got sober, 12-step Dr. Bob, and we're all here tonight. We are all here tonight, you know? And that's the kind of thing, like, as far as human eyes are concerned, you would think that was a failed 12-step call. And as a result of that, millions of people are sober all over the world. And then it goes on to say, just a couple of things I want to read, because The relational aspect, the relationship with God, is so important in the 12 step. It says right here, a kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money in your home, counseling frantic wives, relatives, innumerable trips to the police courts, sanitarium, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to have a fight with him if he's violent. Sometimes you'll have to call a doctor to administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you'll have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you'll have to meet such conditions. All I want to tell you about that is this. I'm not going to spend time, we don't have it, recounting what my sponsors and what my father, daddies in AA had me do when I came in. But from the beginning, if I wasn't making coffee, and let me tell you something, there's nothing I did that was my idea. Then, whether it was making coffee for the group, whether it was cleaning ashtrays, whether it was becoming intergroup chairman, whether it was a representative, whether it was being on the relay for 8 years, whether it was sponsoring people, whether it was being the chairman of the group or the secretary of the group, whatever service, whether it was getting up in the middle of the night and going out and helping the drunk, or going to people's house and doing 12-step work, or sponsoring people there, or even doing a step series, there is nothing I did, or going down to detox, there is nothing I did over a period of time where all of a sudden I stood up and I said, I got an idea, I'll do this. Because I'm a remote control guy. If the remote ain't working, I ain't watching TV. I'm one lazy son of a gun. I'm telling you. I'm screaming all over the house, where's the remote? Because I don't want to get up and change it. If I could do this thing the easy, lazy way, I'd do it and then walk away. And I had sponsors. They warped me. You know, they were on the phone. We're going down to pick up that this guy. We're going down to pick up that guy. We're going to 12-step this guy. We'd go down to 12-step drunks. We'd go down to where they're drinking. These guys were guys that were out there doing service. So I was brought up for 10 or 15 years, 20 years doing this stuff, getting involved in service. Not because I want it. Now I do it all the time, a lot of this stuff. It's just because I've come used to it. It's part of my life. I do this stuff. This is the way I live because I realize how much I get out of it, how much it helps me, and how important it is to me. I'm not putting anybody down, but how many times have I seen guys with 10 years sobriety? 10 years, you know, listen, I have a big heart for guys with long-term sobriety who are miserable. And they're around. They may not even tell you they're miserable. Or they're mad, or they're upset, or they're angry. Or they're sober 10 years, they'll get the chip. They're sober 15 years, they're sober 20 years, but they're pissed off. They've always got something bad to say about somebody. You sit down with them, and all you're going to hear is about this one and that one and this guy and that guy and how this, you know, they've always got something to complain about. But they're sober. And every once in a while, I got one of these guys that come to me, and they realize there's something wrong, and they don't want to share it with the group, or they're not going to share it with the group, you know, because they got 20 years, or they got 15 years. And I sit down with them, and almost every single time, I can tell you they're not involved in service. Almost every single time, I say, how many guys do you sponsor? And they say none. Or maybe one guy, but he's drinking. Almost every single time, they're not involved in seriously involved in service. They're involved in just getting what they can out of this thing and then walking away and picking up their medallions at the end of the month. Service is very important. On page 98, I want to sort of end with this deal. You know, I love to read it all the time because how many times, I wish, you know, I'm a God guy. You know, I like to talk about relationship with God and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, what can I tell you? To me, this is the whole program. This is the whole deal. And how many times have I heard a guy say to me, well, you tell them that, they're going to run out the room. Now, I don't even want to tell you about the history of AA or Dr. Bob the Good Old Timers, what they were doing back then to people. You know, how they were screening them, how they were putting them down on their knees and giving their lives to God before they even allow them in the meeting. You know, it didn't seem to have any dilatory effect. Sure, people ran out, but the people ran out, they were running anyway. You know what I mean? But the bottom line is this. I don't know. I'm just reading from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to read you some. And this is in Working with Others, where they talk about giving stuff to alcoholics. Everything in this 12-step thing is about God, a relationship with God, and pointing the newcomer right from the back to God. From the beginning to God. That's why we hold hands from the beginning to God. That's why we say the Lord's Prayer from the beginning. That's why we say the Serenity Prayer. From the beginning, we don't apologize for it. I wanted to read you just a couple of parts. And this is in the chapter, Working with Others. This isn't postgraduate work. This is what it says. You think about this. They're talking about giving. It is not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. You know, I got a lot of guys that come up to me and ask me for money and ask me for this and ask me for that. And I'll say something, you know, and sometimes I'll give them a little help and I'll do something. But, you know, more often than not, I say, you know, I guess you just got to pray about it. You have to pray about it. You know, he says, your heavenly Father will never let you down. You may lose this, you may lose that. You're going to have to pray what the right way is. You know, even as I feel the anger welling up, because you know something? My mother would give me the money. My brother would give me the money. Because their entire life is spent hitting up people for money. And people giving them money. because they feel guilty, because they want to get it off their back, for whatever reason, and they never have anybody say, no, why don't you pray about it? Whatever, maybe you're supposed to lose that car. Maybe God doesn't, they never have anybody say that. And so I got to sit there and watch them get angry, you self-righteous son of a... you want to know something? But here's what the message says. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcohol commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Which I think is cleaning up another word we probably use, right? Bullshit, right. Bullshit. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn the truth. Listen, job or no job, here's the truth. Very hard knocks to learn. Have you learned this truth? Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. That's working with others. That's what you got to teach them. In order to make it in this deal, the faster you learn, it's all about God, depend upon it, it's not about the car, it's not about my mother, it's not about my girlfriend, it's not my husband. Stop talking about those people. Stop talking about your relationship with God. The faster you learn that, the better off you're going to be. Burn the idea. That's like, you know, like you're burning a cow. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Is that clear enough? Well, apparently not, because we might scare some people off. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery. I think that means you're supposed to. You ready for this? Remind the prospect. I went to law school. You know, I can read this crap. I think that means you're supposed to tell them. Remind them. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Keep pointing him to God. The steps are pointing him to God. The second step points him to God. The third step commits him to God. The fourth and fifth step, you know, clears away that wreckage which blocks him from God. The sixth and seventh step gets him more involved with God and a relationship with God and trying to grow in God's image and likeness. That's what the eighth and ninth step clears away the records, so you're not feeling guilty, so you can look. And the 11th step is all about improving his relationship with God. Talk to him about God. But he might not like me. Well, then I guess that's because you're so self-centered and such an alcoholic that you care more about whether he likes you or not, or whether he laughs at you or not, than whether or not you really want to help him. See, there's a lot of people that think they're helping people, and they're not helping people. All they're doing is they're trying to make sure that the person likes them. Wow. You know? 90% of the people, when I'm questioning people, say, well, I can't tell him that. He says, why? Well, he'll get mad at me. Or he'll walk away from me. I says, so really, you're worried about yourself. You don't really care, but you're worried that he won't like you. You're so worried about yourself and what he thinks about you that you're willing to let him die rather than tell him the truth. And you know something? Maybe the truth is, like guys told me the truth, maybe the truth is he'll walk away from you and say, go to hell. And maybe he'll live another day, like Bill Wilson, wake up and he says, you know, when you told me this, you saved my life because I thought about it. Instead of giving in to the same crap because you are so concerned about how you look, or maybe you're just worried about what other people will think that you're talking too much about God. You're worried that they'll laugh about you. So you'd rather let him die than risk people laughing at you. Because you're worried about whether or not they'll laugh at you because, you know, you believe in this or you believe in that. Maybe that's what you're all about. Maybe that's what you're really all about. Maybe that's what your real deal is. All about you. When you think you're helping somebody else. Maybe that's what you're really scared to dive into this God thing. Because you're so worried about other people laughing at you. You know? That's got to be a pretty crummy self-image. When you're worried about doing what this book tells you to do so clearly, because you don't want to let go, because you're more worried about whether you're some bozo sitting next to you who isn't even paying your Visa bill, thinks about you. So, you know, I didn't get this thing right off the bat, and I'm still trying to get it. And, you know, all I can say is the quote I was talking about this morning, I said, you know, when I first got involved in this thing 30 years ago, I don't know what the hell I believed. I know this, the more I have faith in God, the more my faith grows over a period of a year, the more incredible my life becomes, the easier my life becomes, the clearer things just become clear to you. You just start discerning things. Things become clear. You know, I'll say something. I'm just talking. You know, you might say to yourself, man, I never thought of that. Where did you get that stuff? I got it from God. I got it because it clears up your, you start the, you, I spent so many years trying to figure out why I think the way I am, why I feel the way I am, why people act the way they do, and all sorts of stuff. Let me tell you something. You put your faith in God and start having His mind and look to His mind, how He thinks. Let me tell you something. People's actions, emotions, and motives, and your own motives become so clear to you, it's like a pane of glass. You start seeing how and why people act the way they act. You start seeing how and why you act the way you act. Things become awfully clear. You know? You start reading people and understanding what's going on in their mind, not by what they say, but what they're not telling you. Man, I'll tell you, when you start reading people by what they're not saying instead of what they're saying, you'd be surprised what you can learn about people. You'd be shocked at what you can learn about these people. It's amazing. God bless you. Thank you very much.